Linda Lewis. Doug is a certified financial planner, providing you with a personal financial hotline to answer your questions about tax planning, investments, retirement planning, estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-9783 to become part of tonight's show.
Hello there, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment in financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years,
we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783, that's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will, what's a living will. And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the Certified Financial Planner.
It's the Certified Financial Planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the Certified Financial Planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it? And if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments, home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds? Bond mutual funds, equipment leasing partnerships, REITs, CDs, gold, annuities.
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out of towners, call us toll free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Marianne, how can I help you with your money matter this evening?
I am one of several recipients of a rather large estate. The executor will have to file with the IRS.
All right, and when you say you're the recipient, has someone passed away already, or are you thinking...
Yes, someone passed away about 4 months ago.
All right, so this is a relative of yours that passed away, and the executor is...
Is a bank in Arizona.
All right.
I'm just curious. They keep saying that it will probably take about 2 years to settle this estate, because when you send in the... forms to IRS, which have to be done in 9 months, and they're going to wait till 9 months. After that, they say when they audit, sometimes it takes a year and a half. My question to you is, do you have any idea how we heirs could expedite that?
That's a real good question, and I have a sneaking suspicion that it may be possible. My guess would be, and I would not like to be quoted on this, what I'd rather do is have you call me at the office, and I will put us in touch with an estate planning attorney. I work with several very closely. How many heirs are there?
Well, there are four of us that will get the residual. And
there are four heirs? All right. Well, give me some numbers so I know what we're talking about.
When it gets to us, it won't be very much. The estate's about $1.8
million. All right, so a $1.8 million estate. And are there heavy creditors against the estate?
No, it was about $10,000 worth of bills to pay off, and that's all been done.
All right.
But the bank is going to take about $50,000, and then we don't know what the lawyer's fee will be.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one other a gift of $100,000, and everything that's left gets divided four ways.
Well, that'd be a very good question that I would like to run by one of the attorneys that we work with and see if a unanimous decision amongst the heirs can change executors.
Oh, no, that's not my question. It's too late to change executors. We're way into it. If that was to have been done, and I thought of that, I thought of writing the judge and ask that my brother be allowed to continue. He had power of attorney for 2 years and paid all the bills, but it's too late. The bank has got the bank is in the same state where the court is. They're not, and we're all from someplace else. What I had in mind, is there anything we could do about writing directly to the IRS office saying, look, you know, is there anything we can do to expedite this audit that they apparently will audit? And I thought maybe if the four of us said, look, you know, let's go with it. We're all close to 70 years old, or some of us are 50, but most of them are 70.
Yeah, I think there are some things that you can do. Again, I'd want to be using an attorney. I think there are some things. It shouldn't take 2 years to file a tax return, that's for sure.
No, it only takes 9 months to file the return. You have to file it in 9 months.
So why is the estate being audited?
Oh, they just assume that every estate of any size gets audited by the IRS.
Well, that's not necessarily true at all.
Well, I thought the bank is a little... but I thought maybe if I wrote, and this would be the Ogden, Utah branch, I thought maybe I'd just write and ask them to do an immediate audit. Yes.
Well,
yeah, but you've had no experience with that, I think.
No, I don't think you...
It's a little bit off of your...
It's not off my area. I'm working in this area all the time, but I'm working with an attorney is what I'm saying. We generally bring an estate planning attorney in who is able to represent himself before the IRS.
Oh, I see
what I'm saying?
Ah, maybe that's what the four of us could do.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. If you will call me at my office, I'll see about getting us in touch with an attorney who works in this area and who is able to go. You see, your attorneys fall into several categories. Number one, you've got estate planning attorneys that simply go ahead and prepare wills and trusts and so forth. They're very uncomfortable dealing in the area of taxes and accounting.
Uh-huh.
There are other estate attorneys who are also CPAs and who are very comfortable in this area, and they like to actually represent you before the IRS. You see what I'm saying?
I see. Well, I didn't know that.
Exactly. And the consumer doesn't know, typically. They're not questions that you ask an attorney, and quite frankly, they're not types of questions that you would be expected to ask. But the attorneys that I like are the ones who are able to go in and work in both areas simultaneously. They know their ways around the IRS, and they also know the estate tax laws.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
So you want somebody who's an expert in estates and taxation.
Estates and taxation and comfortable dealing with the IRS, exactly, and has represented ones before the IRS. So, Marianne, if you'd like to call me at the office, I'll go ahead and see about getting us in touch with someone that that I've worked with and that I can feel comfortable recommending to you.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
You're sure welcome.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. My office number, by the way, is 872-7000.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for calling, Marianne.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, what's new, Doug, in the area of tax planning?
Well, Lynn, to most Americans, income tax planning means collecting W-2s, 1099s, receipts, and canceled checks, and either filling out the complicated forms or paying for the help of a tax preparer. But this is not tax planning, it's tax calculating. There are five fundamental tax planning strategies for tax reduction. Number one, time your income and expenses so that you pay the lowest total tax amount over several years. Time the sale of your appreciated assets in order to realize the gain in a year when your income is down, you have a loss, or your deductions are higher than usual. Number two, convert taxable income to non-taxable income through tax-free municipal bonds. Number three, defer taxes to a subsequent year so that investment returns are earned on a before-tax basis. Invest in your company's 401k, if available, or consider an individual retirement account. Number four, divert taxable income to someone in a lower tax bracket, usually children or grandchildren over age 13. Or if you own a business, it may be beneficial to incorporate. Number five, deduct your maximum allowable expenses. Alimony, business expenses, state and local taxes, property taxes, moving expenses, medical expenses, mortgage interest, and charitable contributions are all allowable deductible expenses. So there you have it. Timing income, converting income, deferring taxes, diverting income, and deducting expenses. Five strategies for tax planning. In 1947, federal judge Learned Hand stated that no one has an obligation to pay more in taxes than the absolute minimum allowed by law. Therefore, it's proper for you to get as much help as is possible to take advantage of the rules rather than be victimized by a higher-than-necessary tax bill. If you've been wondering about income tax planning, I hope my comments have helped. Remember, seek competent financial advice. And if you have any financial questions, just give me a call at 872-7000. That's 872-7000. And remember, your financial future is at stake.
Well, you're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. And if you've got a question, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on the open lines at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. And if you're out of town, call us toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. And for cellular callers, it is *680. Well, Doug, let's take a caller now.
Well, Dean, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you this evening?
I've got a couple of questions. What kind of cost are you looking at for financial services such as yours?
Well, I never go ahead and mention advisory fees on the air because they differ according to clients. We charge at our practice. We charge by the hour. Some planners go ahead and give a flat annual fee. We do offer that to certain clients. Other planners go ahead and charge any number of types of either by the hour or by the quarter, by the month, by the year, by the plan, and so forth. But if you'll call the office during the week, Linda will go ahead and she can discuss that with you a little more. My job tonight is to really to sort of educate you as to what's out there and how a planner functions.
Okay, good, good. The other question I had is about retirement. I'm sort of remiss in getting any retirement plan started. But I recently talked to an insurance agent who suggested that I, or suggested a plan for me, and when he brought forth the plan, it essentially was a whole life policy, and investing a certain amount in that each month, and it building up over a period of time. And I really was trying to find out if there, you know, one, is that a sound way to go about it? I mean, obviously, I guess I can use the additional coverage, but I feel like I have enough life insurance coverage.
Life insurance is an arrangement between you and an insurance company that you will pay a small amount of money, called a premium, as you and I know, and that at the time that you die, the insurance company will pay your beneficiary a whole bunch of money. And if you go ahead and buy a $100,000 policy or a $500,000 policy, and you go ahead and make the first monthly premium of maybe it's only $500, and you die the next month, then your wife won. Because she got $500,000 and you only cost her $500. Okay, that's the gamble, and that's called risk management. That's exactly what it is legally. It's risk management. Interestingly enough, it is against the law in North Carolina, according to the insurance commissioner's regulations, to use the term investment with regard to insurance.
One of the things he was saying was that, the money would accumulate tax-free.
When you think about what's accumulating in your insurance policy, what you're doing is you're paying more money than the real cost of that insurance, and it's going into an accumulation account that is cash value. But before it gets into that cash value account, first come the commissions that go out, then come the administrative cost of running the insurance company and so forth. So that cash value, yes, you are able to borrow out your own cash value. And yes, it does accumulate tax-free, but my goodness, if your goal is to accumulate money, do it over in a mutual fund or an investment. Because the day you start to take money out of that insurance policy, out of that cash value account, you're basically taking money from your future widow. You see what I mean? You're borrowing from the death benefit. And if you borrow out long enough, you'll collapse the insurance policy. So don't confuse the two. Insurance is not a retirement vehicle. It's not an investment.
So essentially, if I've got enough money to invest an additional sum of money each month, it would be better off, even if it's not a tax, or maybe there's other way of doing it tax-free.
Absolutely. First, we do need to look at the risk coverage necessary and buy an inexpensive 20-year level term policy if we need to go ahead and have a certain amount to cover. But the amount of money for retirement, you need to put that money monthly into an investment program. But I just wanted everybody out there to understand that insurance is for death protection, and investments are investments, and we shouldn't confuse those two.
And if you have further questions, call the office in Raleigh at 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. And we appreciate your calling.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Doug, I was wondering if we could have a little discussion about tips for your elderly parents, because I find that sometimes when people call in at the office, they have questions about how to help mom and dad make sure that their affairs are in order, especially if one of the parents may be sickly.
Tips that the children should use in dealing with elderly parents?
Exactly.
Very good. I would say the first thing is to find out, is there a will?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And if they each have wills, very often you find out they're not both wills.
I speak to so many people that are in their 60s and 70s, and they've never drawn up a will.
Number two, we want to find out when the will was last reviewed.
Exactly.
Children should ask the parents, when was your will last reviewed? Parents will generally say, oh, well, I don't need to review it. It's long and say, it's real simple. I just leave everything to your ma or everything to your pa. Well, the kids need to go ahead and let mom and dad know that the laws have changed, dad. The laws have changed, mom, and things can be very, very messed up if we don't do it right.
So get your will revised.
If at all possible, mm-hmm, get the will of mom and dad in your hands and review it yourself with the help of a certified financial planner. Number two, consider if a revocable living trust is advisable. In many cases, it is. I had someone call the other day about a durable power of attorney, and they had no idea that a durable power of attorney, Linda, can be the worst estate planning tool if you don't know what you're doing. Because you may think that a power of attorney will solve all the problems, and then all of a sudden, your father or your mother becomes incapacitated. You want to go ahead and start helping them take care of their financial affairs. You use this durable power of attorney, and lo and behold, you're told, I'm sorry, we won't accept it by the financial institution that you're trying to go to.
It's too old, right?
Actually, there are many mutual fund families that say a durable power of attorney is only good if it's 10 days old or less. Can you believe that?
So, shocking.
So a revocable living trust is the answer there. Joint ownership is another strategy. But those are the things I would look at, first of all, the tips there. Then I would go and look at the executor's position, find out from mom and dad who's the executor. Number three, they should get an analysis of the estate. You know, the worst estate that you can have is the one called I love you will. I leave everything to my wife. Or she says, I leave everything to my husband. And lo and behold, the kids, after it's all settled, say, golly, we lost $150,000 in taxes and we didn't have to pay a penny if we had done it right. Why didn't mom and dad know?
Well, a lot of times their attorney is to be blamed, right?
Well, I have to admit, Linda, you are absolutely right.
They collected the fees, but they sure didn't advise their clients properly.
You know why? Because so many people, when I ask them who drew up this will, they say, well, it was George. He's been our family attorney for years. And I say, well, is George an estate attorney? Well, he does everything. He's done our real estate. He's done this and that. But, you know, an attorney who is not a specialist in estate law and doesn't know the difference between an irrevocable trust and a revocable trust, a testamentary trust, an inter vivos trust, who isn't current on the specialties of estate planning, that's very, very bad to have your wills and trusts done by that person. That's like having a brain surgery done by a chiropractor or by a veterinarian or whatever. I mean, he'd be great on animals, but he's no good. I don't want him operating on my brain. And that's what these wills that I'm looking at so often are. They have not been done by estate planning attorneys.
So if you're listening right now, make sure that you get that will out or that trust out and make sure you read it or have your kids read it and make sure that your affairs are in order. I choke sometimes when I speak to people, and I either find out they haven't drawn up a will, or, as you said, their attorney did whatever they thought was necessary. But when you had your will drawn up, and then 10, 20 years passes by, 30 years,
the
your
laws
estate
have changed.
Has appreciated.
Okay, your estate has changed, but the laws have changed also.
Exactly. And if all of a sudden the value of the estate has greatly appreciated, right? That's where the estate taxes can be a real problem.
And I love you will is an accident waiting to happen.
Work with a financial planner. And if you have any questions locally, you can call us at the office at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
What I find when I speak to so many people is that a lot of our elderly people either have their money spread over two or three or five banks, a lot of CDs. And I mean, the thing can be really complicated. And sometimes kids can help their parents just simplify things,
mm-hmm.
get everything so that mom understands if dad predeceases her, that everything is understandable for mom,
mm-hmm.
or even that everything's understandable for the kids so that they're not faced with a terrible estate problem or a probate problem, right?
The probate rules are so confusing state to state. If you, for example, happen to have property in two or three different states, then you have to open up probate issues in each of those states. Now, this can be avoided with a revocable living trust, and you bypass all of that. That's one of the advantages. But on the other hand, many people call us about revocable living trust because they've heard me talk about them on the air, and they think this is the tool that's going to reduce their estate taxes, and it doesn't. Revocable trusts do nothing to reduce estate taxes. Now we need credit shelter trusts.
So the revocable living trust, what gives you the privacy factor?
The revocable living trust avoids probate expenses, takes away the problem caused by a durable power of attorney, deals with the question of incapacitation. When you become incapacitated, someone is set up to go ahead and handle your affairs while you're still alive. It also solves the problem of the cost after death when there are assets in different states. There is some protection against creditors. Also, the matter of confidentiality. When you die, nobody knows what you owned because it's in this revocable trust and it's not listed in the newspaper, but it does not solve the question of estate taxes. That requires a credit shelter trust. And people confuse these two.
So make sure that you understand the fine details of your estate planning matters. Doug, along with, yes, exactly. And along with the estate planning issues that we've just discussed, people need to make sure that they are adequately insured. Right? I guess when you do the analysis, if your financial planner goes through and determines what is the value of your estate, then they work backwards, right? Determining if there's going to be an estate tax problem or, you know, if there's more insurance needed to protect the family.
Insurance is one of the biggest nightmares that I see when I look at clients' estates and clients' situations. For example, very few people even know that they should never own life insurance in their own name because it becomes part of the taxable estate of the one that dies. They think, well, gee, insurance benefits they pass to the beneficiary tax-free, don't they? That's exactly right. However, they're taxable in the estate of the deceased. So most people have no idea that the ownership of that policy should never be in your own name.
And then
in an irrevocable life insurance trust or in the name of one of the children, but never should it be in your own name. Okay. Now, number two, what about insurance that's not needed? Very often we got all this insurance and it's not needed to the surviving spouse. She's got more than enough. What's needed is to cover the estate taxes when both of them have passed away, because all this insurance is going to dump into the...
It's going to create a bigger problem,
well,
right?
Well, yeah. Mom inherits an extra $400,000 of life insurance, and she's sitting on a $500,000 stock portfolio. What does she need that for? It now becomes Uncle Sam's going to take a third of that when Mom dies. So that's not going to work. What we need, however, is to move into a second-to-die life insurance policy, which is cheaper and bypasses all of the taxes.
If you're listening and you have a question about your estates or your insurance, do give us a call at the office. Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. Again, that's 919-USA-7000, and thank you for joining us. We're going to take a caller right now.
Well, Don, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you this evening?
Okay, Doug, this is a little bit of an offbeat question. It's actually for a friend of mine rather than me myself. He's retiring at around age 50, having had a very good income from university teaching. And he doesn't quite have the 40 quarters of earnings that are required under Medicare and Social Security. The reason he doesn't is because he was in some exempt state government or employment or something. But he's not planning on working any further before then.
Okay.
Is there any way to convert investment income into employment income?
No.
There's no type of investment he could make in which might be regarded as a business.
Well, how familiar are you with his situation? I might ask you some specific questions. As a financial planner, as you know, Don, if you listen to me regularly, Linda and I get pretty specific about people's situations so we can answer them. If you want, I'll get into his situation if you've got some numbers for me.
Yeah, I think I can.
All right. What does his portfolio look like right now? You say he's 50 years old.
Yeah.
Is he married?
No, he's single.
Single.
He owns a home.
All right. Let's take a look at his portfolio. First of all, let's look at his assets. He's got a home worth how much?
Well, I would estimate, worth $200,000.
All right. He's got a $200,000 home. What does he have in, say, cash and CDs and liquid assets, non-investments, like money markets and so on?
Well, I would say he's got about $200,000 there.
$200,000 in cash and CDs.
And then maybe another $200,000 in stocks. That kind of thing, stocks and bonds.
200,000 stocks and bonds. He's taking retirement. Does he have any retirement plan at his employer that he's leaving?
Yeah, he does.
And is that eligible for rollover? In other words, what kind of plan is it? Is it a 401k, a salary reduction plan, or you say he was teaching?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, he's got a 403b plan.
I think that that's
it. Might be the TIA CREF.
I don't know that for sure.
Well, anyway, let's ask the numbers. What does he have in it?
No, I would estimate maybe $150,000 or something.
All right. Well, let's assume for our numbers he's got another $150,000, which we call rollover money or qualified money.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, does he have anything else besides these three types of assets, his cash and CDs, his stocks and bonds, and then his retirement plan money?
No.
All right. What about on his retirement? Is he taking a pension from the university?
Well, he would get some pension money from the university. Yeah.
What number should I use for his pension? $2,000 a month?
Sure. He has some income from the books, but it's minimal. You know, just $1,000 a year or something. It's not enough.
Right. Let's assume that he's only going to be getting, let's say, $1,500 a month, mm-hmm. then from his pension.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what his living expenses are?
They'll be low.
Does he live a high lifestyle? Does he drive Mercedes and BMWs?
No, just a cheap car.
All right. Well, I'm going to show you something right now to show you that what you're doing is really straining at a gnat, because here's the deal. Assuming that his lifestyle is going to be quite high for him, $3,000 a month, $36,000 a year. Would you say that's probably beyond what his lifestyle is going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's assume that the only amount he gets from his pension is $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
Okay. Now he's shy $1,500 a month. Where does that money come from? It comes from those assets.
Sure.
We add up all the assets and we got $450,000.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how much will that produce for him? Well, $450,000 working with a certified financial planner, an asset allocation model, and under a rather conservative approach, should be able to go ahead and give him about $3,000 a month from his investments.
Yeah.
If he's getting $3,000 a month investment income, and all he needs is $1,500 a month to meet his living expenses, that means he's reinvesting $1,500 a month. He is compounding. His asset base is growing very dramatically when you're starting with close to $500,000.
Yeah.
To say, what can I do to qualify to get myself a $300 or $400 a month Social Security check is nonsensical.
I see.
Social Security is not a big thing for him. It's not going to support him.
No.
It's not going to affect him. And if he's got $500,000, you're telling me he's got $200,000 in CDs and cash. This guy needs help real fast, I'll tell you. What do you think,
really?
Linda? A guy with $200,000 in cash and CDs?
Yeah, he's definitely not maximizing his income.
No, I mean, he's sitting there earning 2.5% to 3%, and he could triple his income immediately. And then he's sitting in stocks and bonds, $200,000. That's totally improper for him. He should be in mutual funds and managed monies.
Yeah.
Too volatile a portfolio.
Yeah. So what he needs help on is not how to figure out to get a few more quarters. We can do that, yes. If I were working with him, I could show him how to go ahead and get some more quarters, depending on what kind of employment he wants. Not from investments, no. Investments do not qualify.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do have to, you could file a Schedule C, self-employment, and then depending on how much you earn, it's going to be, he'll be funding it, you know, at the rate of 15%, 15.5% on his self-employment tax, and that is the same.
Well,
yes.
that's very helpful, and it's important to, as you say, to spot the big picture in there along with the trees.
Yeah, it is. His situation really is to do an analysis of his income potential from his assets, add to that his income from his pension, subtract his living expenses. If he has a big enough delta, then he has no worry whatsoever. He will never touch his assets if he works with a planner. He will never touch his assets because they will be growing much faster and producing more income than he can use.
And if we can be of any assistance, you can call me at the office in Raleigh. That number is 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Well, thank you very much. You're extraordinarily clear, as always.
I hope that helps, Don. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Doug, Roger had a question and wanted to know, what are zero coupon bonds?
Well, Linda, zero coupon bonds are bonds that pay no interest until they mature. You buy them at a deep discount from their face value. And the biggest advantage to zeros is that they reinvest your interest at that same rate for as long as the 30 years. But the big disadvantage is you have to pay taxes on the interest just as though you received it each year. Even though you're not receiving any interest, you have to pay taxes on it. So you're better off putting zeros, in my opinion, into a tax-deferred account such as an IRA. Also, if you sell before the bond matures, you could get a big shock because zero coupon bond prices tend to fluctuate very, very wildly.
Well, are you saying that if you get interest off of that zero coupon bond that you have to report it on your tax return every year?
Right. You're not getting any interest, but it's being credited. You're buying a bond that matures for $1,000 20 years or 30 years from now. You're buying it for $260, and it's like adding so much interest each year for 30 years until eventually it's at $1,000, and you report that amount that it grew as interest, even though you don't get any. So they're very good speculative plays, but they fluctuate very wildly.
What makes them different from the junk bonds? What are junk bonds? How do they differ from?
Well, a treasury bond is guaranteed by the U.S. government.
Oh, uh-huh.
So if you hold a treasury bond or a treasury bill up until maturity, you have an absolute guarantee that it's the safest investment in the entire world because the government prints the paper, the 1,000 green pieces of paper, which we call dollars. A junk bond is a guarantee from a corporation that may be in bankruptcy or may be in trouble. It also guarantees it'll pay you. But if they're broke, then there's nothing for them to pay you with. So both of them are very speculative, but one is the speculation that if you cash it in before maturity, you could get more or less than what you put into it, being the Treasury zero. The junk bond, you could hold it to maturity and still get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, they're both speculative before maturity. On the other hand, at maturity, you have the guarantee.
Okay. To any of our listeners, if you have a question or if you would like to receive our introductory packet of information, I'll be happy to send it to you. Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That is USA 7000. If you have some financial planning concerns or questions about your situation, get a notebook and start jotting down some of those questions and work with a financial planner. Richard has a question about rolling over a payment into an IRA. He's 39, and he's getting a lump sum distribution from his 401k plan. And what he's wondering is, what's his best investment? What's the best vehicle that he could use at his age?
That's all he told you? Just what's the best investment?
Right.
Well, I guess if he says that, well, let's say, if he didn't need the money now, then he should roll his distribution, his 401k distribution, into an individual retirement account. That's an IRA, of course. And by rolling it over, that's a tax-free transaction. If he doesn't roll it over, he'll have to pay a 10% tax penalty as well as income tax on the distribution. In other words, let's say he's talking about $60,000 that's accumulated in his 401k. All right. He's never paid tax on that money because that was a salary reduction that he took along the way. So if he takes that without rolling it over into an IRA and just takes the money, he'll pay taxes on $60,000, which is about $20,000 of taxes he'll pay. Plus, he'll pay a 10% penalty because he's under 59. So that's $6,000 more. He's going to pay maybe $26,000 or $27,000. But if he doesn't need it, then he should roll it over to an IRA. Now, because he has about 20 years before he retires, you said he's only 30 years old or 39?
39.
He's 39 years old. All right, so he's got over 20 years. He's got a little bit over 20 years before retirement. He shouldn't invest too heavily in bonds, in my opinion, or other income-oriented investments. He's got that much time. I would have him go ahead and put it in stock mutual funds or maybe a 50-50 split between a stock fund and a bond fund. And if he happens to be leery of the stock market, maybe he should choose a conservative fund, such as a balanced fund or an equity income fund, which has a mixture of stocks and bonds in it.
Well, Doug, could you distinguish the difference between what a stock mutual fund and what a bond fund is, a bond mutual
fund? Yeah, well, that's pretty easy. A stock fund is a giant pool of stocks. Let's say it's a $1 billion pool that has maybe 100 stocks in it, and you put in $500 or $5,000 or $50,000 or as much or as little as you want, and you have a pro rata piece of all 100 or 200 or 500 stocks that are in that $1 billion mutual fund. So you've got a pro rata share of all those stocks, and the average price of all the stocks is computed at the end of each day's closing, and that's called the net asset value, and you have your share of all of them, of the average of all of them. And a mutual fund of bonds could be a $1 billion fund, and it's also got a whole bunch of pieces of paper in it, just like the other one had a whole bunch of pieces of paper. The only difference is the first pool, its pieces of paper were stocks.
Right.
Second pool, its pieces of paper are bonds, and bonds are guaranteed income-producing investments. Those are loans. They're IOUs. So there may be, let's say, 100 bonds in a bond mutual fund. Well, each bond, maybe there's an, each bond is an IOU, Linda. So let's say you've got a bond from IBM. Well, it's an IOU from IBM, and mm-hmm. IBM will go ahead and pay interest back to the mutual fund, which owns that bond, just like all the other 100 bonds in there. And then the manager of that fund, he'll go ahead and decide which bond he doesn't like, and he'll sell it out and buy in another one. But all the time, he's got a whole bunch of these IOUs in the fund, and they're all bringing in interest. And you, again, you put in anywhere from $500, $1,000, $10,000, $20,000, or whatever, and you have a pro rata piece of all of those IOUs. Just like in the stock funds, you had a pro rata piece of all of the stocks.
That sounds good. Thanks for explaining that.
You got that?
I think so. If you'd like any other information, call me at the office, and that's here in Raleigh at 919 919- 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Let's take another call, Doug.
All right, Keith, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you this evening?
Yes, good afternoon, sir. Under what circumstances may one withdraw from their IRA? I understand there's educational purposes, health problems, and or if you're planning to buy a residence. I would like to buy another home in another state, staying over one half year in that particular state.
What's your income, Keith?
Oh, $500,000.
All right, you've got a $500,000 income coming in, and your expenses, I'm sure, are less than a $500,000 a year.
Much less, yes.
Then what is the – how much is in your IRA?
Oh, probably about $300,000, $400,000, something of that nature.
Unless you retired from another company and you rolled over that old retirement plan into an IRA.
Correct.
Is that what happened?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then you have a rollover IRA. What you're remembering is that there are ways that you can go ahead and remove money from a retirement plan and not pay the 10% penalty tax. But this money has never been taxed, and the IRS will get its tax. The additional 10% penalty sometimes can be applied.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could get this money out because you're over 50, and we could do it in a series of systematic payments. But no matter how you get it out, you're going to pay tax on it.
Okay.
To take it out and pay tax on it now, I don't think that's the way that I would advise you.
Hey, Keith, have you ever worked with a financial planner?
I did work with one at one time, and there's good and there's bad. And I received your portfolio initially, and obviously Mr. Lewis has tremendous credentials regarding same. It's just that I wanted to give you a call and ask you a question over the phone.
And we appreciate your calling. So, you know, if we can be of any further assistance to you, just give us a call.
Okay. In the meantime, have a pleasant evening.
All
Bye.
Right. Thank you, Keith.
To any of our other listeners, if you have a question or if you would like to receive our introductory packet of information, I'll be happy to send it to you. Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That is USA 7000. If you have some financial planning concerns or questions about your situation, get a notebook and start jotting down some of those questions and work with a financial planner.
You know, Lynn, one of the things that that Keith is remembering, and it's really interesting the rules that happen on retirement plans and how to get around or how to, I shouldn't say get around them, how to maximize the rules. Keith's question was not one that a lot of people have, but a lot of people want to know, is there a way to avoid the 10% penalty tax? And yes, there is a way to avoid the 10% penalty. Now, you cannot avoid the income tax when you take the money out because that money has never been taxed. But that extra 10%, which on taking out, you know, a significant amount is significant.
Right.
Can be avoided by using one of the very little known rules called the series of systematic payments. And the series of systematic payments will work. He could actually have set up, if he wanted to get money out, which he doesn't need to, but if he wanted to, he could set it up over a period of 9 years and take the same amount out each year for 9 years and avoid that 10% penalty.
People generally have, some people are confused about their retirement plans, particularly if they separate from a company. And, you know, they feel that, well, now that I'm leaving this company, can I access this money? Or maybe there's the temptation to do so. But they don't always understand that there is a tax, right, Doug, and a penalty. So you're really not getting everything that you thought you were getting Uncle Sam's going to take his portion.
Well, it's back to social capital. Social capital is the part of your wealth that's not yours. It's destined for society. Learning how to control your social capital is the crucial distinguishing feature.
Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Doug, I've been seeing ads in the papers for guaranteed Ginnie Mae's, U.S. government certificates. Oh, the rates vary sometimes between 7.2% up to 8%. What I was wondering is, are they really that good? I mean, are they really giving you that type of return.
Sounds great, doesn't it, Linda?
Yeah, it certainly does.
But there's a little trick there that you need to be aware of. These are called Ginnie Mae's. They're government guaranteed. Yes, they are. But there's a trick that you need to be aware of and everybody should be careful about with regard to Ginnie Mae's. They're not what you think. For example, Linda, take a $100,000 Ginnie Mae. And remember, every monthly check that you get is both interest and return of principal. So let's see what happens. Take $100,000, Linda, and multiply by 7.27%.
Well, that equals $7,270, right?
That's right. Okay, now divide that by 12, and how much interest should you get every month?
Roughly $606, right?
That's right. That's right. And how much are you going to get yearly?
The $7,270.
That's right. That's what you think. Now, assume it pays out over 5 years. How much interest do you think you should get?
Well, 5 times 7,270 should be about $36,350.
Sounds simple. But you know what? That's not right. You will not get $35,000. You're only going to get about $15,450. Let's take a look. You need to remember, Linda, you're going to be getting nice big checks every month. How much interest did you figure you'd get each month?
$606.
That's right. $606 interest, and your check will be about $2,272, which means not only are you getting $606 interest, but you're getting $1,666 principal. Now go down to the end of the year one and see how much interest you really made.
Well, let's see. Only $6,607. Doug, is that right? I mean, I thought I was going to get $7,270 instead. I didn't get that 7.2% that I was supposed to be getting that was advertised.
That's right. You only got 6% interest, Linda. Now go down to the end of year two.
Well, my payments aren't staying the same either, are they? I mean, they're only $2,040. My payment at the beginning was $2,272.
That's right, Linda. And also, what was your interest in the first month?
$606.
And what's your interest now in the 24th month?
Only $374. I don't understand what's happening. I thought it was supposed to be 7.2%. Well, is the interest changing?
No, Linda, the interest is still 7.27%, but it's on a smaller and smaller principal. Your first month, your check was $2,272. $1,666 of that was your own principal, and then every month since then, you've been getting $1,666 principal back. But the size of your check and the amount of your interest have been dropping drastically. How much interest were you expecting that first year, Linda, and every year?
Well, $7,270.
And how much interest did you get, Linda?
$6,607, and that was for the first year.
And how much did you get for the second year?
Well, only $5,152. That's only 5.1%.
And how much did you get in the third year?
$3,694. That's definitely not 7.27.
That's right, Linda. That's only 3.6%. And what about the fourth year, Linda?
Well, it goes down to only $2,289. Doug, I thought that the government was guaranteeing me 7.27%, but now it's down to 2.2. It sort of sounds like false advertising. How can they do that?
You're right, Linda. It's really sneaky. You were expecting over $36,000 in interest, and you only got back $18,500. And the worst thing is, Linda, when you got your last check, then there's no more principal. You only received half the interest you thought you were going to. They call it 7.27%, but that's like saying you're getting a quarter of a pizza back every day as payment, and later discovering that you were getting a quarter of a big 16-inch pizza at the beginning, and now you're being paid a quarter of a little 2-inch pizza.
Well, that's sure not going to satisfy my hunger. I think they should definitely understand what they're going into before they...
Ginnie Mae's are really sneaky.
Yeah.
If you'd like some further information, I'll be happy to send you some. If you'll call the office at 872-7000, and then we can give you some more detailed assistance. Doug, James had a question about 401k rollover. James doesn't like the way that his 401k money is being handled. What he's wondering is, can he pull out of the plan and roll it over to an individual retirement account?
Depends. If he's under 59 and a half, he can only roll his 401k money to an IRA if he retires, leaves his current job, or becomes disabled. If he's over 59 and a half, the tax law allows him to cash out of his 401k. The company may not. Can you tell you anything about the company, Linda?
Well, no, not really.
Well, we need to have that information. But the company may not. Some 401k plans won't let you take your money out before you retire or leave the company. If you remove money from your 401k, however, then the IRS allows you 60 days to put it into what we call an IRA rollover account, to move it from that 401k over to an IRA or pay taxes on the amount withdrawn. Those taxes can be very substantial. We always recommend doing the rollover, and you've got 60 days, and we recommend using an independent trust company to do that.
Work with a financial planner. And if you have any questions locally, you can call us at the office at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. Let's take another caller.
Mary, this is Doug Lewis, certified financial planner. How can I help you?
Yes, I was basically wondering if you could explain a living trust.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself, Mary. How old are you?
Well, the question is not for me. It's actually for my father-in-law.
How old is he?
78.
He's 78. And is he married or single?
He's single.
He's single. What's the size of his estate?
There's a problem with that. He had a stroke. He was living by himself, and he was very self-sufficient. He can't recognize people and things like that. So his children went in to try and figure out how he was financially, and he's been saving for a long time.
Uh-huh.
He lives very, very modestly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had said somewhere around $700,000. But
all right. Now, he no longer is competent with his senses. Is that the condition?
Most of the time.
Well, and you're considering the question of, is a living trust suitable for him?
Yes.
Well, I don't think that you could get a living trust for him, because a living trust is an arrangement set up by the individual. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A living trust, a revocable living trust, has a number of wonderful benefits. A living trust will minimize administration and probate costs arising at death, since the property is titled in the name of the trust, and it avoids probate. And a revocable living trust also allows flexibility on the part of the trustee. The trustee is usually the person who sets it up, or it can be a child or another person. The person who sets it up transfers his assets into the trust and identifies and names the trustee. And then, since it's revocable, the person who sets it up can make any changes in the trust agreement anytime they wish. That's why it's called a revocable living trust. And the living trust avoids publicity with respect to the transfer of property, because details are not made as a matter of public record after a person dies. And one of the biggest advantages of the revocable living trust is that it avoids the necessity of a court-supervised conservatorship in the event of a physical or mental incompetence, but you got to do that beforehand. In other words, when you set up a revocable living trust, you're really planning for what if something happens to me. If it does, then you've named a subsequent trustee who follows you, and that keeps children from coming in and messing things up and all the things you're saying.
Yeah.
Did anybody have any power of attorney for his affairs? Or
I'm not sure. One of his daughters can write checks in his name. Does that mean?
So,
well, there probably either there was a power of attorney, or there was or he had her as joint ownership on the account. But a revocable living trust is set up while a person is competent, and it prepares for the day when, suppose something happens and they're not competent. If indeed the doctor would agree that he was competent, you could, with the help of an attorney, establish a revocable living trust, go to him, and if this was his desire while he was competent in moments of lucidity, he could then go ahead and sign a trust naming either you or your husband as trustee and so forth. That's a matter of legal advice, and I can't give you legal advice, so I can only say that I do know of cases where that has happened, but it would depend on someone testifying that he is competent at the time that he establishes his trust. The whole key is going to be competence, what he can set up now, and the next question is going to be, who does the court say has control over his assets right now? And that's just not someone that walks in and says, I'll take control, unless he's given control to someone.
And if you have further questions, call the office in Raleigh at 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling, Mary.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, that's all the Money Matters we have time for today.
So we want to thank all our listeners for joining us. And for any other questions you may have, call my office during the week and we'll set up an appointment to meet with you personally. That number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. And we'll be back next week on this same station at the same time. In the meantime, have a great week. And remember, your money matters because your financial future is at stake.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.